You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
I heard about a tragedy yesterday that I think is a perfect example of why it is that we are focusing on what we're about to talk about, which is how to hopefully survive the festive season with most of your emotional well-being roughly intact. And I heard the story of someone who had died by suicide in the last week or two, and it was a complete unexpected tragedy that had befallen this particular family. Now, a long time ago, I had seen stats. I don't know whether it is still true or ever was actually empirically robust statistics that we are particularly prone towards heightened feelings, including feelings that can lead to suicidality during December and January. And it's because so much happens at this time. You're going to get matric results that you might be anxious about as a teenager. It's the end of the year, and there's an expectation that you need to provide a bounty for every family member that's coming to visit because you are the one person that works, but secretly they do not know what trials and tribulations you've gone through the entire calendar year. You haven't shared it with them, and now you are under enormous anxiety, for example. It might be the time of the year where, for whatever reason, you've decided now it's a good time to quit your job. It may also, to take a more familiar, sadly, South African example, be a time of the year that you associate with having lost someone, maybe because of a car accident that happened this time 3 years ago. In other words, there are all sorts of things that can trigger in you incredible feelings that doesn't make it a cheerful time. While everyone around you seems to be drinking a lot, going out, partying until 4 a.m, happy-go-lucky smiles all round, and basically, the festive season seems to be a time of compulsory happiness, and that makes it even harder for those of us who are not prone to having smiles on our faces 24 hours a day to get through December. And I know at least one of you listening to me right now, you know what I'm talking about, where you are counting down not to Christmas, you are literally counting down to the 2nd of January, because then you can go, oh, phew, the worst of the compulsory happiness is over. So how do we deal with the triggers of trauma during the festive season? That's what we're going to talk about. And we're joined in studio by clinical psychologist Cassandra Govender. Cassandra, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
It's only a pleasure. And we both have those smiles on our faces. That's exactly what I'm talking about, right? But this is an enormously difficult time for so many people. And sometimes when one even raises this kind of topic, when everyone has got Boney M. and Mariah Carey in their ear, they may not even want to talk about this topic because you go with the Christmas cheer. Yeah. How important is it for us to keep it real?
Well, I think extremely important. So the first step is to actually have conversations like this because the media and society create so much expectation about how we should celebrate and what this time should look like that you're right. A lot of people don't know that if they're struggling and if they're unhappy during this time, that it's okay and it's allowed, you know? Mm. So I think it's so important for people who are listening to be able to hear this and say, you know, it is okay if you are struggling in this period. You don't have to be smiling all the time, but it's a huge stress. And, you know, I think this period of the year, it can make anybody who's coping relatively well throughout the year struggle a little bit because of the stress and the anxiety.
And so in a very real way, there's a kind of festival or festive blues that people experience. That might sound like an oxymoron, but for millions of people around the world, it is not. It is their complex psychological reality right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much pressure during this holiday period. There's so many things that people might be going through, and you're correct. It's so important for people then to be all festive and happy and not talk about it. There's also really difficult conversations people might struggle to have, for example, around finances. So it's a very difficult period.
And I think let's go through some of those that are all too familiar with us. Finances is one of them, right? Yeah. The economy is in a downturn. Many people are unemployed. Many people are what economists refer to as the working poor. Mm-hmm. And yet there's this expectation, my kids must keep up with the kumalos in terms of what toys I buy them. Mm. If I'm going to go home to see my family in Durbs or in the Eastern Cape, I have to go with a whole truckload full of groceries, for example, that financial pressure can translate into mental ill health.
Completely. And especially if you've got one breadwinner in your household. So let's say there's one person in charge of the finances, or if both of you are working, the to entertain people, so to be able to have people over, the finances associated with that, with this entire period of going out every day, going to people's houses, bringing things with you, never mind the gifts that you have to buy for everything. So I think this entire period just associated with it is a lot of money that needs to be spent. But also keeping in mind that January becomes very difficult then. So you're already stressed about how you're going to make January work.
That's true.
Because of this. And then now you've got this 2-week period of intense social engagements where you're going to have to spend so much money, and it's sometimes not practical.
And the marketing triggers add to it, right? Mm. So the companies have now got clever. They already start sending you SMSs saying, do you mind if we just take the money that we normally take on the 7th of Jan, we'll take those now so that your debit orders go off before Christmas.
Yeah.
And to some extent, you're playing it forward, or paying it forward, literally. But on the other hand, you're like, oh, I want to pay now. So you have the reminder that January is coming.
Yeah.
I don't have kids. And just the other day when I was in Hoolies, I thought, my God, already, and this started a couple of months ago already, I think now it's probably permanent all year round. There are adverts around about stationery and about what you need for kids going to school. So while you're experiencing the financial dilemma right now of needing to send remittances home, buying gifts for everyone in the family who is visiting, Hoolies is also reminding you that you will need to pay for school uniform. And all of that can literally mess with your head.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot. You have to cover 2 months of really big events over basically sort of one and a half salary. So it's a very stressful period. And as a nation, I don't think we're able to talk about money quite comfortably. I mean, but amongst family members itself, it's quite difficult for us to sit in and say, listen, it's going to be a tight year. What can we do to make this still meaningful? And that's part of the problem.
Absolutely. For me, one of the things that keep this conversation the most real is not financial. It is the sense of isolation that many people feel because they experience their spirit with loss.
100%.
You might have lost your mom, your dad, a sibling in January, and now you're going to go through the first Christmas without. For that person, those people, it is enormously hard. I mean, I lost my brother last year, and I made sure that my folks were with me up for Christmas. But I also know that they've struggled with grief. So it doesn't necessarily get easier with the second Christmas without my son, for example.
Yeah.
And we don't talk about that. But many people will secretly be going through incredibly sharp, melancholic feelings.
100%. So I think social isolation, there's three layers of how that might work. You know, difficult family relationships might leave certain people struggling with family. So even if you're around a family, you're in extreme distress, or you then don't go to your family at all and you're alone.
Yeah.
You know, divorces or families that have broken up. And then, of course, loss, which is more the typical one. So all of them actually bring in an element of social isolation and loneliness.
That's right. And the people in my life, friends, acquaintances, in each of those categories. I watched TV the other day, and a very good friend of mine who's in entertainment was speaking how this is going to be her first Christmas. She may be listening, and lovingly spoke about it, without the kids, because it's the first Christmas where the kids have to be spending time with mom or dad, because mom and dad got divorced. As it happens, dad's going to have the kids. So not only is it going to be her first Christmas without hubby, but also without the kids. And that can be a trigger. So if you're listening to this conversation between Cassandra and I, we invite you to call in. Cassandra is a clinical psychologist. And let's speak about these feelings, because compulsory happiness is not what UCBC is about. I'm about honesty. And this is difficult for many of us. And let's talk about what it is that may be triggering you right now and during this time. It could be the isolation, the three layers that Cassandra has spoken about. Give it to us again. I think that captures a huge chunk of them.
Sure. So I think difficult family relationships. Mm-hmm. So whether you're with the family or deciding to stay away. Because
so for example, many gay people who can't go home because the family is homophobic. That would be an example.
Yeah. Or, you know, you can't come out to your family and you want to spend it with your loved ones, so you'd have to choose, right? Divorce or any kind of families that have broken up.
Yeah.
And then, of course, loss.
011-883-0702. We welcome your calls. And in Cape Town, 021-446-0567.
Eusebius MacKaiser.
Eusebius MacKaiser.
On 702 and Cape Talk.
18 minutes after 10 o'clock, we're having a necessary conversation. Christmas isn't all about the cheer. It can be incredibly emotionally difficult for many people. You may associate it with loss the first time that a loved one is not in your family. You may have dealt with divorce and all sorts of ways in which that has impacted you. And now this is going to be your first Christmas, maybe without the kids with the other partner. First Christmas single, that can be incredibly difficult. And of course, you can have difficult family relations. I know many people who can't go home because family is not a safe space for you. It's not a safe space. Maybe your family has not respected the choices you've made. Perhaps you're in an interracial relationship. Maybe you're cohabiting, for example. You could be a member of the LGBTIQ community, and that doesn't resonate with some family members. Or maybe you were raped, you were preyed on by an uncle, and going home is just not safe because that uncle is still welcome at the lunch table, because that's what happened in our families. Let's talk about these issues. We've got a clinical psychologist with us. Cassandra is here. Hello, Dean.
Hi, Eusebius. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for calling in today.
Wonderful. Perfect. It's actually the second time I got through today. Funny enough, the topic that you're mentioning now, I find myself in exactly that, and I'm so happy that you guys are discussing it. I'm in a relationship now for the past 2 years, coming January. So my fiance, or person I'm seeing, she lost her father literally 2 days before Christmas on the 23rd. So for me, it's been an up and down roller coaster every time now, especially now again as I speak. Obviously, the emotional distress is phenomenal. But there are two other factors that I would like advice on. Just a year after the father passed, 2 days before Christmas, she went into a very dark place. The whole family was scattered, as he was the one that kept the whole family together, the funny man, always going on holiday. So my question is, then the mother started dating somebody else a year later, great person. However, he doesn't mesh with the family, and he's trying to fit into shoes he should not. So how do I get her out of this dark place, trying to fix everything between the family as they're not getting together anymore? It's the 1st December. The whole family is not being together. And thirdly, how do I get her to prepare every December? So I'm making peace with it now, that it will be an emotional time for her every single year with myself, as I have to support her.
That's right.
What advice can be given?
Thank you, Dean, and thank you for sharing that. Sorry about what you're going through, but picking up the phone second time today and talking to us is a very good start. Cassandra, what comes up for you as you listen to Dean's story? He's no longer with us, but I'm sure he's listening.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, it's an absolutely tragic story, and one I'm sure a lot of people can relate to. So I think it's really great that Dean had the courage to call us and talk about it. You know, I think the devastation that can happen when you've lost an integral family member, like he said, the dad seemed to be the glue that held the family together, and it caused quite a lot of fragmenting when he passed. I think one of the most important things, and then, you know, his wife, the daughter, then felt the need to try and take over that role and keep everyone together. So what I'm thinking is, maybe the most important thing to do is for the family to try and find a way to talk about what's going on. So it seems like a lot of unsaid things have gone on amongst the family, and that's creating some of the division. And if you find that it's, you know, calling a family meeting, and it can be very stressful and very difficult, so I can completely understand people's apprehension towards it. So it can happen with a professional if you really feel you need to. Or you can start by just saying, listen, it's Christmas, we family, we don't have to be all smiles, but let's talk about what's happening and how we're going to plan. So that's a really important thing. I think when you have loss of any kind, you want to start creating new traditions, but you want to talk about that. You want to get the family together and say, listen, it's never going to be the way it used to be with dad around. So how are we going to celebrate going forward? Let's talk about a new tradition we're going to create together.
We're having this conversation. What's the date today? The 19th. Let's commit, Cassandra, to have a similar conversation, or maybe even the exact same one. Mother, we'll have the same conversation next year, but let's have it in June. To Cassandra's point, that ideally you want to plan, and it's easier to plan when emotions are not heightened. So in June, when you find yourself around the fireplace and it's cold and emotions are just, everyone is chillaxed.
Yeah.
That might be an easier time to raise the question, guys. what's going to happen in December when we're triggered again.
100%.
You know, so it's not to say one can't plan now, but planning by definition is something you should do ideally in advance. And, and I guess we part of the media role that we play and we can do better is also to get the timing of these conversations right. This is a nice question to ask around what triggers you now, but it's even better to ask it outside of this period.
100%. And to allow for enough time for engagement. Remember, you know, one conversation might not magically fix everything. We might need to have more than one. The first conversation might get a bit heated, so we need to come back to the drawing board. So we need to allow ourselves enough time to think and process information that comes up.
Got lots of people who want to chat to you. Before we take another call, I want to pause over something you said, which is good anyway, even outside of how to cope with festive blues, and that's the idea of forming new traditions. We've had a conversation of that on Family Matters show once, just about new parenting or blended families and one of the ways in which to try and create a new sense of identity.
Yeah.
Just speak to me a little bit into that topic, the incredible fun, but also therapeutic and other benefits of thinking about new traditions.
100%. So, I mean, even if we're talking about families, for example, where divorce has happened, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, we're talking blended families, what you want to do is you want to create a new normal. So everybody has this perception that this is how we should celebrate. You're going to say, well, no, you know, there are other ways. Maybe, for instance, what we can do is we have a New Year's a Christmas Eve celebration. And we have our special dinner on Christmas Eve. And what we do as a family is we celebrate in these particular ways. So I think you make room in the narrative for change, for different things to come about. And you make space for the ideas that things aren't always picture perfect, but that doesn't mean it can't be meaningful.
And if you wanted to, I'm not thinking very creatively here. My partner will ask why I'm not this creative at home. You can combine that with memory if loss is one of the things that's triggered for you, right? Let's say, for example, Dad used to be massively into charity or philanthropy and always used to remind you, no, we're not buying toys. We have to, I don't know, you know, give money or bring in someone from the streets over Christmas. You could decide a new family tradition by way, for example, might be okay in honor of Daddy, who always used to be into giving. Instead of us buying toys for each other, we're going to every Christmas buy toys and give it to the needy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's a new tradition, but it's also one that's still connected in some way to the memory.
100%. And I think you can do different things. Like, for example, I know my dad loves Boney M. I don't get it, but he absolutely loves it. So
I get it.
You know,
been to the concert.
he it's his thing. He wants us to listen to that CD, right? And initially, I think if anything had to happen to him, it would be very difficult. But that's a tradition maybe to hold on to.
Absolutely.
So that we get the family together, we sit around the Christmas tree as we've done all these years and listen to Boney M. And that's one way we still keep the family together,
100%.
But remember Dad. So that's a good example.
Mzi, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Mzi. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, let me greet you also to your Kathy. My name is Zomawe Zuse. I'm from Eastern Cape, from the clan of Amawawa, in the land of Amabacha. So I was raised like with my father to believe that we can change many things. As I was next to him, now he's passed away, he left with me all those things, and I was more of against many things, tribalism, many things are dividing the tribe and the family. So now I plan the family reunion on 31st, which is with the revealing stone of my father. Then I have a lot of challenges first, because the family at first never understand, but now they understand. Even those who are left outside are like the Bachanas, those ones who have no voice in the family, they are more supportive, they expect me to be there, so, but I already did many things. Just now I'm left because I have organization, I have like...
Mzee, how do you feel about that? So you basically stepping up into that role, a kind of patriarch in the family, a provider. Are you comfortable with that, or does it come with pressure, or is it something that you are taking on as just something that's important to you and you're okay with it?
Now I try to take it like as a normal pressure to take me to some level, but sometimes it gets too much when it comes to financial, because when they sometimes feel like when to can't take it, but I managed to take the step, which was challenging for the start and the arranging of the tombstone. But I'm now on, I feel like I'm cracking because of the pressure, the organization. I have a non-profit, the pressure. Those people I have to help, also their emotional, why I'm broken.
There's a lot that comes up there. Mm. There's something wonderful about him wanting to continue part of being the rock that his dad was.
Yeah.
But he uses language like, I feel like I'm under pressure and I might be cracking.
Well, I think what was so interesting for me from that call from Z is that the idea we also have as humans is that we need to fulfill a role. So once a role in the family is lost, it's up to someone to step up and take it on board, whether we feel ready for it or not, whether we want it or not. And I think on one level, Z did that because he wants to keep the family together, but I'm sure there was also pressure, who's going to do it? We need someone to keep the family together.
Mm.
So in these kinds of instances, I want to say when there's a loss of someone, it's important to reach out for support. So we can't do it all alone.
Mzi, did you hear what Cassandra said? Just Cassandra, you can speak to him directly. Are you still there, Mzi?
Yes, I hear what she's told me, and I appreciate it. And we are the right person. I was want to talk to. I just want to release myself a little bit because I understand now is the last final, and I can stand for this because only way to give my father what was expecting is to do the right thing. The right thing is only I did to do the political talking and do anything. I like my people. Then I go to give them that love and I bond with them. So I'm ready for the stress, but just I was feeling depressed and more.
Sure, and it completely makes sense because it's a lot of pressure and you're holding a lot for the entire family, not just yourself. So it's so important that you do talk about it and look after yourself. So I think no man is an island. Mm. So even though you're looking after everyone and really taking that on board, I think there's a place where you need to get support from, whether it's sometimes delegating some tasks, whether it's, you know, asking trusted family members, maybe uncles or someone like that, to just help you a little bit with some of the tasks.
Absolutely. Jeremiah, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Mr. Guest, and good morning to your guest.
Morning, sir.
Today is the 44th day that I haven't seen my son. So I separated with my partner a couple of months ago, had an amazing relationship with my son. Everything was hunky-dory, and then until obviously the separation happened, and ever since then, she one day just sent me a text telling me that if I want to see my son, I need to follow the legal route, so go to court and all of those kind of stuff. So I tried to get my family and her family to intervene. That didn't help. So I then had to follow the legal process. So the legal process, I was in court yesterday, and I was told that the court has been remanded till April next year. Mm-hmm. Now, this means that today is the 44th day that I haven't seen my son, which is like psychologically really, really killing me. And now, unless if I have or I raise money to get a lawyer, and that lawyer then helps me to apply for an urgent whatever, you know, so that like, we can get an interim order in the meantime, you know, unless if I raise money, I only then will I be able to see my son, which is a bit of a challenge on my part. So,
Jeremiah, firstly, I'm going to put you on hold just for 1 minute. And then we're going to come back to your case. A lot going on there. I'm going to ask Cassandra to speak to you directly in a minute or two.
Eusebius Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
27 minutes before 11 o'clock. If you've just joined us, we're talking about what may be difficult emotional triggers during the festive season. And I'm joined by Cassandra Govender, who's a clinical psychologist. Jeremiah, thank you so much for telling your story. And obviously, legal difficulties, emotional difficulties, so much that comes up, Cassandra. I'm going to allow you to engage, Jeremiah.
Sure. Very difficult case and very sad as well. I mean, very difficult time to be without your child. So very complicated. You know, on the one hand, I'm thinking, I'm not sure if you're allowed to just keep a child away from a parent without any kind of parenting plan in place. But I completely understand how everything shuts down at this stage. So trying to get an intervention and help is going to be difficult this year. But what I would suggest in the new year, as things open, is to actually maybe see a social worker in the interim, because a social worker can be really helpful in trying to gauge both parents, do an assessment on the house, and sort of really start driving this custody process. That's obviously a long-term plan, just to give you some relief of where to go if a lawyer is difficult. But to talk about your current situation now, which is where you're sitting, which is you don't have access to your child, and it's obviously having a huge impact. And there's not much we can do to change that at this stage. So my advice is to really look after yourself. You know, going through a divorce or a separation and then not having access to your child over this period is going to be extremely difficult, and I can understand you feeling devastated. So reaching out to a family member or a friend that you are close with to try and get some support during this time, and just looking after yourself and keeping that going until you can get to the new year.
Jeremiah, what are your coping mechanisms normally?
Sure. Like what I normally do, like on a daily basis, it's almost like I could preempt what was going to happen. So what I would do is I would record videos of myself and my son. So normally when I get back home, I'll just go and watch videos of myself and him. And yeah, that's what I do to basically try and cope. So at least when I do that, and I feel like a little bit better.
Sure.
So yeah, but maybe just to respond to Cassandra. So just in terms of the legal process. So once one goes to court, and then we both appear in court, then only the court itself allocates a social worker for the whole parental planning. So from the understanding that I got from the children's court is that the social worker will be allocated as soon as we appear in court, so that a parental plan can actually be put in place. So the only thing or choice that I was given for now was that I needed to get a lawyer in order for us to get like sort of like an interim order that can be put so that I can be able to see my son, which will obviously cost me money. But yeah, that's the option that I was given. So I don't know.
Jeremiah, if I can also add from the peanut gallery, I'm not an expert here, but from one human to another human, I think also it might be useful to remind yourself that, you know, life is not an event. And one of the difficulties when you go through the first Christmas alone, the first Christmas without your son, your daughter, whoever, is that that moment can be very, very consuming. But the truth of the matter is that there will be birthdays, there will be other opportunities in a longer timeline to create new memories, opportunities for bonding. So without trivializing your pain and your difficulty, I think when it gets particularly dark, it may be worth trying to talk to yourself just about the importance of not thinking everything is a zero-sum game in terms of Christmas of 2018.
Thank you.
And if I can just add something, you know, you spoke about a lovely coping mechanism, which is that you recorded videos and that's what you look. You know, one of the things I'm thinking that might be helpful is for you to, you know, maybe still get your child a gift or even write them a note on the day as if of the things you would have wanted to tell them that day, in the idea that when you do see your child again, you get to give them that, but also they know you held them in mind.
That's right.
So I think it's a good way for you to also keep your momentum up, realizing that I have this and I will be able to not have Christmas back, but still have a moment back.
Mm. Ntabi Seng, good morning. Thank you for holding on.
Good morning, Yubi. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Ntabi Seng. How are you?
I'm good, and good morning to Cassandra as well.
Good morning.
You guys spoke about the issue of blended families, and now my case is, and I'm guessing quite a number of young women experience this as well. I've got two daughters, 13 and 6, but they do not belong to the same father. So they have two different fathers. So my problem is that my eldest, her father is very, very involved in her life. Like right now, she's at her father for the holiday. Now, the problem gets in where my second daughter, my six-year-old, her father is not so involved. And I see it affecting my little girl because every time her sister goes away, she'll be like, but Mama, why am I not going away to my dad? You know, and especially at this time, it just becomes hard because she's so small. I mean, she's only 6. You know, and I don't now want to find myself in a position where I constantly am the one sort of trying to now close the gap for this guy, because I've tried many times to sort of tell him a bit, but I don't want money. I don't want anything. Just a phone call would be enough. But he just drags his feet. And now the difficulty is the other guy is so involved in his daughter's life, my eldest. And now my little one is just really struggling with not understanding why Papa's not around, you know, and I try so hard to overcompensate, but what do I do? I can't exactly call him all the time. I mean, he knows she's alive, she's there, and he's got access to her, but he just doesn't want to play a role. And my difficulty is that she's only 6. How do I deal with a 6-year-old if she sees that? But you see, Dad is present. Why is Papa not here? Call Papa to come and pick me up, and he just doesn't.
My heart goes out to you, Ntabi Seng, and thank you for being brave enough to voice your story. And you're right, there will be many people for whom your story will resonate. Cassandra, I'm glad I can kick to you.
Yeah, no, Ntabi Seng, I can hear how stressful and how difficult this has been for you and how you're left carrying so much, of course.
Yeah.
You know, my initial thoughts is, you know, even though she's 6 years old, she's been exposed, you know, to so much anyway. I wonder, because you know, you've mentioned you've been trying to compensate and really make things, try and make it better for her, but it still leaves a hole in her, kind of in her heart. Have you been able to talk to her about the fact that dad isn't around and that it's not okay that he's not around, but it's not her fault and sometimes it happens?
I try to speak to her, Cassandra, but the difficulty also for me is that I don't want to vilify him in her eyes.
100%.
You know, I try very hard to sort of put him in a good light, even though this is very hard for me. And I just want to speak the truth. But sure, I always just have to remind myself that I don't want her to hate her dad because of what I said or what I planted in her mind. So I always have to be the one that sort of, there's no, but Papa's busy, you know. Yeah. Papa will come, and it's just, it seems like I'm the one sometimes that is the stumbling block at times. I think that's what you should use.
But here's here's the thing. If I may, like, let's have a little bit of a chat, you, me, and Cassandra. Mm. I mean, my thing is, like, if somebody's a deadbeat father, then you're not vilifying him if you tell your child the true facts. And the other thing about wanting to not, quote-unquote, vilify the absent dad or parent is that your child grows up thinking, okay, well, if dad is busy and doing amazing things, I don't know, maybe he's working his butt off and sending mom money, but he's not doing that. The child starts filling in the gaps in the story in their head. And you don't want your child to end up thinking, part of the gaps in the story is that mom is keeping dad from me. Because if dad is this amazing mythical figure, but an amazing mythical figure, then the only logical conclusion that I can jump to in my six-year-old head is that mom is the witch. So you need to protect the truth. And the truth is very important. The other thing is, you know, my parents got divorced when I was 10. And you do your best as an adult, all of us are like this, to be better parents than our parents were, better lovers, better than the person who was absent in our life was. But we end up psychologically reproducing the behavior that was role modeled to us. So you're also role modeling to your little one how to be a single parent. And if you are role modeling lying, and then ask yourself, is that really what you want to role model as well, Cassandra?
Yeah, and I think more than that, it's also creating expectations. So, you know, every time we say, no, he's busy, no, he can't get to the phone right now, or no, we're sort of delaying, creating this idea that at some point he won't be busy, or at some point we can have a connection, where it seems like unless he shows up to the party, there's going to be no connection. So whilst it's going to be really difficult to give her the truth, and maybe she won't be able to process all of it, you know, the things you want to make sure she understands a lot is that it isn't her fault, because she's got a sister whose dad is so involved in taking her on holidays. In her mind, she's going to also start to think, not just what's wrong with mom, why doesn't she want me to see dad? She's going to think, what is wrong with me dad doesn't want to be around? So you really want to explain to her, it's not you, and this happens. Humans come in all shapes and sizes, and sometimes they really can't deal with their stuff. And as a result, it leaves us in positions where your dad isn't around when he should be, and you deserve for him to be. And when he's ready, I'm here for you, and we can make that happen. But for now, you know, it's you and I, and we're going to get through this together.
Very tough, Ntabiseng, but
yeah. I'm in tears, but thank you so much. You guys have helped me so much. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. I just want to pause before we go to our letter. I mean, there's just so much I feel for Ntabiseng. Mm. She does not want to be that single parent that talks badly about the one who's not there. But it's often the case in life that good intentions is not enough to rescue consequences that come from the good intentions that may actually not be the right consequences.
But also, I think we, as a nation, as people, we really want to avoid or placate over harsh realities or consequences that are part of life. We want to protect ourselves from them. But sometimes it's better to let someone go through it, because it's a learning process. And of course, it will cause pain and it will be very difficult. But it's necessary, you know, it's necessary for healing. I think it will be easier for Ntabiseng's daughter to reconcile what happened early in her lives when she has the truth versus all the expectations. But, you know, I think there's no manual and there's no guide on these kind of things when they happen to you. And, yeah, I think Ntabiseng's done a great thing then reaching out and getting help.
Two beautiful things as I'm listening to her that comes up for me is that she's already raised a little daughter that is precocious enough to speak up, which is a good sign, and that she herself is clearly a very present mom.
Yeah, 100%.
Aletta, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi there. Thank you so much for holding on.
No, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me. Let me go back. In 1995, my second eldest son committed suicide. And 11 months after him, my eldest son died in a car crash. 6 months after that, I got divorced. So my life fell apart at that stage. And you know what? To get up from there is very difficult when you still have two other children that you need to cope with. So it was tough, and then I tried to really pick up, because I had to stay the strong one for the children, and they couldn't understand why the father left. Father couldn't cope with the devastation of losing two children, so, and my two children couldn't cope. And I was the stronger one. So I had to be strong. And then 2 years after that, I collapsed. My life fell apart.
Sure.
Then in 2005, my children were left home and they were grown up now and gone to varsity. And I moved from Pretoria to Cape Town to try and find some way to pick up my life and make something of my life again now. Mm. I became a road safety activist. You should know me. I'm very verbal on what I do. And that's how I found healing.
Mm.
But I have a mechanism that I'm using. I have two crosses, a black one and a white one. So the days I feel I cannot cope, the black one is there. Because people need to realize, and I had to learn that in a hard way, is that mourning does not have a time limit.
Mm.
You need to allow yourself to mourn, whether it's the death, whether it's a divorce or whatever. You need to learn, you need to give yourself the time to mourn. Mm. When I'm okay, I use the white cross.
Mm.
Then, Two years ago, I lost my father, and the year after that, I lost my mother. And those were my anchors. So my bad time is October, the one son's birthday, November, the other son's birthday.
Mm.
Then it's Christmas, January, my father passed. February, my son passed. March, the other son passed. August, my mom passed. It's a hard time. But you need to find, and that's what I did.
Absolutely.
And I don't know if your guest will agree with me. You need to find something that makes you tick so that you can get up in the morning.
Absolutely, Aletta. We've got to take a break. Before we do so, just because this nicely takes us to the last theme, and it's a big one that Cassandra and I want to unravel with you, which is coping mechanisms. What are healthy and less healthy ways to respond to this? I think a letter begins to set us up. I love the idea of choosing what to wear.
Yeah.
It would be nice if more people did that. Mm. If you see me wearing the black cross, stay out of my way, Cassandra. That's wonderfully practical.
Or offer me some tea, maybe.
Or offer me some rooibos tea.
Yeah.
Exactly. The other thing she said that I think is so crucial. There's no formula, there's no template, and there's no correct timeline for loss.
100%. And that it can take, you know, it can be years later and it can still hit you some days like you've just found out, or it can still hit you really hard, you know, that you've lost this person and I can't believe my life has changed without this person.
I want to add to what Aletta said. Not only is the timeline different for two people, but crucially, the timeline is often not linear.
Mm.
So you may think you're okay for 5 years. It happens to me sometimes. You know, I'm okay with my mom having passed on many, many years ago. You think you're okay, and you think that the linear process has now completed its journey. And then you see that one auntie that looks like your mom, and it can be an instant trigger that takes you by surprise. So we should also allow ourselves for a non-linear process.
Yeah, 100%. And how I like to explain grief sometimes to some of the clients who come see me is that it's like living in another timeline. Mm. So you almost have like two lives in one, three lives in one. There was a life in which, even though you're still existing, those kind of memories and your life was a particular way. And sometimes we move towards creating a new life, but then we get reminded that also, hang on, we used to live like this and we used to have these experiences that we don't have anymore. So it's not something we can completely shed. But I did want to quickly add something, two very important things. I think the first is this idea of being strong. I hear it often with parents in particular, and they say, you know, I have to be strong for my children. I really need to make sure that I just carry this load. And often what they mean by that is they hold themselves, they don't always let themselves mourn, you know, because they feel they've got to get up and go. And I completely understand it because, you know, often it means I've got to become the breadwinner. I've got to look after the kids. I've got so much on my plate. But what I like to encourage people that see me, I like to say to them, it's okay to cry in front of your children and cry with your children. Most people think that's a terrible idea. So on the one hand, I'm saying, I mean, you don't want to do it every second and you don't want to make your kids responsible, but you do want them to understand that it's appropriate to be sad when we grieve. We can actually be sad and we can survive it and still be functional in the world. So I think a lot of what happens is when we create a template for our children on how to grieve, and they see we're not allowed, we have to be strong. We can't show emotions. So let's just keep going, rather than we can still be emotional and be functional.
Maybe we can change the mantra. It takes strength and it means that you are strong when you are able to emote visibly and in front of your children.
100%. Because you're showing them and you're explaining to them, we can cry and be okay.
Eusebius MacKaiser.
Eusebius MacKaiser.
On 702 and Cape Talk.
Weird things happen on Facebook, on Twitter, hey? Like, you wonder sometimes, why is this handle following me? Hey, Marva, I've got a new handle here following me that followed me a minute ago. Mail Escort Services. Me? Are you calling me gay, dude? I want to talk a little bit about coping mechanisms. Sabello writes in and he says the following. This is my third Christmas without my partner who died in 2016, and I've come to hate Christmas. It is the loneliest time. I can't even take leave as it means being alone for longer. If someone works during this time, is that avoiding grief and loss, or can that be a healthy way to respond?
I think it can be a healthy way to respond. I mean, I don't think there's a hard and fast rule about how people should cope with things. So a lot of people might imagine it's the worst way to spend Christmas, but that's because you may have a nice family you get to go home to. For him, it might be too triggering. So I think, you know, if he is working from like 7 in the morning until 10 and not having any time at all, we'd be a bit concerned because he might burn out as well. But I think it can sometimes be quite structuring and quite relieving to know you have some kind of plan in place for you already to just help you get through this time.
What would be unhealthy ways to respond?
Okay, so drinking, I think you'll see a lot of, and this one is so easily disguised. So drinking and food. So alcohol and food are two very common things we can use. We can comfort eat a lot, but obviously comfort eating comes with the idea of huge amounts of guilt and weight that gets put on and consequences after that. But both food and alcohol look normal during this period. So you can be drinking and eating and everybody thinks you're fine, but actually you're very, very unhappy inside. So those are two quite unhealthy coping mechanisms. Conflict and aggression. You can have family members that are quite aggressive, creating a lot of conflict because they're not feeling okay with their lives, and withdrawing, you know. I don't know. I think withdrawing, I don't know if it's an unhealthy thing. It just depends if someone's locking themselves in their house, they're not going out at all, they're not eating, that's a bit unhealthy. But a little bit of withdrawing for space is not unhealthy.
And that brings me to the final thing. We've only got 2 minutes left, which is how I must respond to someone else. And yeah, sometimes I think we miss emotional cues, or we we have good intentions again. If Cassandra seems like she's been okay the whole morning during Christmas, but at 2 o'clock she suddenly looks a little bit withdrawn and goes into the room, I feel like sometimes we need to just leave people alone. Sometimes go give Cassandra, offer that one beer. But sometimes it's also okay to recognize, stop putting pressure on people to be happy, to be drinking, to continue with the party. And I don't know why we feel it necessary to be invasive when someone wants to be left alone at this time.
100%. I think be respectful. So what I'd suggest, because a lot of the times people might struggle to also say no, they want to leave, but they don't know how to tell you because you're going to get offended. So if you see someone isolating, you know, don't call out to the whole entire family, oh my gosh, look at this person, what are they doing? You know, quietly slip out, just say to them, you okay? You know, are you doing okay? What can I do for you? Would you like to You know, would you, do you want to just stay here? You'll stay here, no worries. When you're ready, you can come out. If you feel you want to go home, I'll help you get your stuff. You just let me know what you need and leave it in their
court. So just be self-aware. I mean, there are things 100%. We say and we really don't mean to scar or to be annoying, but it can be very unhealthy. So if someone looks a little bit maudlin and you go like, come on, dude, cheer up, man. It's Christmas. Just check yourself.
Yeah. Like, be respectful of people's processes and understand that being depressed and being unhappy, they are real things. It's not like when you're one day sad. So I think that's the real hard thing. You think, I've been sad before and friends took me for beer so I can cheer up. It's not the same as really being depressed and having festive blues. So really, I think just being self-aware, and I think that goes for both the personal person experiencing it and family members and friends. Let's anticipate. You know something's gone on in this person's life. Anticipate that they're going to be having a negative reaction and be there the way they need.
Cassandra, thank you for coming in. Have a not a Christmas filled with sensory pleasure. Given today's conversation, I'll say have a peaceful Christmas.
Thank you. That's a great way of saying it. Mm. Thanks for having me.